into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now then, very happy to say Ronan O'Gara joins us. Good evening.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Good, thank you. Lost last night, so disappointing. The run is over, so I have to get try and back on track this week.
Right. I didn't realise you were playing last
night.
Yeah,
Sunday night, 9 o'clock in Paris. Got destroyed, really, by Macalou, a French, I don't know the name, number 7 from Stade Francais. She's had an exceptional game, really good.
Right.
We were off the pace in certain aspects, but I think as a coach, it's pretty refreshing when you see someone that good at the game.
Yeah.
Worth maybe a little Google for people that are keen at positive rugby. What an athlete, scored 2 brilliant tries, and they obviously deservedly went on to win the game.
Okay. I had naively assumed maybe international weekend you mightn't be playing. So is that out of your system now, or are you still
weren't listening to me for the previous weeks we've been talking. We are 17 weeks in a row. So it's full on.
I can't listen to everything you say.
You're moving on to your next question to set me off, aren't you?
No. I was going to ask if 24 hours on, because you seem in reasonable form again. Are you getting better at digesting those losses and not letting them ruin the whole next day?
Yeah, I was cranky last night, obviously. Long bus journey home, got home at 5 a.m. But that's the top 14. It's something you'd love to get better at, but I think you can never accept defeat, and especially the manner of it.
Mm.
But the people who are more experienced than you, they seem to say that happens in the top 14, but you obviously... You'd love to be able to change that and change that mantra. And if you did, you'd be the most successful coach.
Mm. What was the score? I'm trying to find the score here.
35-13.
Okay, yeah, I see it here. Stade Francais, 35-13.
Yeah, so we were 25-6 down just before halftime. We dropped the ball, kind of going in nearly for a score. And then that would have given us a lot of hope. Obviously, nowadays in rugby, 13 points isn't that much. And then we got to 25-13 with 30 minutes to go, but we weren't accurate. We weren't accurate, so we didn't deserve anything out of the game.
Did you watch Ireland-Wales on Friday?
Yeah, I did. It was a good game. Yeah, a really good game. I thought, Ireland didn't let Wales exist. They suffocated them. They owned the game, and I thought up front they were impressive, and... Gibson Park looked fresh, he looked sharp. James Lowe obviously looked good for the 80 minutes, but I think it was astounding really that as good as he is, that Wales concede a try like that in the 80th minute. I've never ever seen that before off of, just a scrum and a one play pass. Mm. And he's obviously a powerful winger, but from what you'd expect of Wales, that never would happen on their watch before.
A lot's happening on their watch at the moment. They're in a bad place.
Yeah, they are. But obviously, they have Georgia coming up, so that's a huge game for them. And it can change the momentum, and the coaching team will be crying out for that. So it's an opportunity to get a starting point for that team. And but we're not here, I suppose, to talk about Wales. We're here to talk about Ireland. I thought Ireland were good, Joe. I was impressed. I thought there was a lot of performances from people, like Peter O'Mahony. Johnny looked sharp. A lot of players, put in powerful performances. Notably, Caelan Doris looks an exceptional player.
He seems to have nailed down his spot, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of... players, very good players. What they do, they seem to have an extra second or two with or without the ball, he looks very, very comfortable. And even around kickoff receptions, he's very, very comfortable. There's never any panic about, oh, will he catch it or won't he catch it? You just assume that he's, even though he's still at very initial stages of his international career, he looks very, very comfortable in his role, and his skill set is really, really good.
James Lowe, just full of energy and catches the eye. And he said something afterwards, which almost sounds too simplistic, but when you watch him play, I'd say other outside backs could pay heed to it. And he just said, as an outside back, I refuse to let the game pass me by. I'm just going to get involved. And I think it's great when you see him popping up on the opposite wing and popping up here and there and getting himself involved. Is there any downside to that? Can that mean you lose your shape in certain ways, or is that just a good thing for him to get involved?
No, it's a good thing, and that would come from environment. I would think that would be, obviously, from his days in Super Rugby, that would be a massive, I suppose, focus for all outside backs in the Southern Hemisphere, but also then going into Leinster, and they're winning all around them, and they're probably competing with each other as opposed to other teams, and that's what, I suppose, sets them apart, that they're, you know, I mean, winning the game is one thing, but actually probably winning the internal battle and getting probably recognised by your peers in that team is something that those players crave and search. And he seems to be very much in the growth mindset positivity framework, which suits him really well. He is vocal. He's spiky. He's a very, very good player, and his positivity shines through every time you see him.
Mm. Because I would suspect lots of wingers can think to themselves, well, I'm fulfilling my role and I'm sticking to the process and I'm on my wing and I'm doing the right thing, and games can pass them by. We've seen that with Irish wingers too much. Sometimes you just have to, you know, get a feel for the game and insert yourself into it.
Yeah, there's a skill in that too as well, Joe, I think, in terms of picking your moment, when to rove and when not to rove. There'd be nothing worse from probably Johnny's point of view if he... because the way his brain works too, he'd be thinking three or four phases ahead if his winger isn't there, okay, when he really needs him to be there. So I think it's obviously, when it becomes multi-phase, you get have more capacity to seek out opportunities on either side of the wing. But work rate is huge in the back three nowadays, and with the way defences are as well, they're a really, really key part of the jigsaw. And I think the massive, I suppose, positive for the Irish players was that I think we looked to have another 10-15 metres width in our defence line, which was really good to see, because Wales never looked like scoring a try.
And so at times Andy Farrell even himself said we looked narrow in Paris from a defensive point of view. So what allows you to get more width in your defence?
Of course, because you win collisions.
It still comes down to that.
Test rugby, if you win the first two, the opposition probably have to kick the ball. If you get on the front foot in the first two phases, you're going to keep playing with the ball, and it's really, really hard to get width in your game. If you can slow down the ruck, you can get your spacing right. If you can get your spacing right, you can get off the line. If you can get off the line, it gives confidence to the people inside and particularly outside you to leave the line together. So so much of it comes down to tackle quality, but I suppose the preparation to get the tackle right.
So there always will be a brutal simplicity to rugby. Who's going to dominate that contact area? Ireland dominated, and Andy Farrell used that word, Wales, not least up front, but also in the tackle, and seemed to kind of bully them physically in so much as you can. So Twickenham at the weekend. Doesn't seem like that's possible for Ireland to do that to England.
On the strict, probably... on the strict specimen against specimen, no, but there's different ways to achieve gain line success. Footwork, vision, changing the point of attack, playing with the full 70 metres width of a pitch. And there are most definitely areas of going after them and going after where the space is. And I think Ireland will have a very intelligent attack menu, I suppose, prepared for this weekend. And I think after last weekend, they'll be confident and they will have, you know, epitomised by James Lowe, they'll have a spurt in their step, and they'll go in there. Obviously, a lot of that could be repelled by the fact that Johnny isn't playing, because he gives them an awful lot of security and an awful lot of belief. But it has to be an opportunity for whoever is next. And, you know, you're reading, I suppose, a few articles today, the thoughts of Conor Murray playing at 10. I don't think that's an option. And you'd like to see that it'll be either one of the Burns, or it'll be Billy Burns from last weekend, who did well when he came in.
Yeah, and he seems to be going through the return to play protocols, and he'll be available for selection. Why would the Murray thing just not work? Why is it too much of an ask of him?
Because he's a number nine. He's played his whole career.
Well, look, I know he's a number nine. Everyone listening knows he's a number nine. But I mean, why? Like, what can... I feel like the French lads would be like, ah, go on, you can do it. Like, it's just rugby, and they'd slot in. Why can't we be a bit more loose about that kind of stuff?
You can be loose, but like, there's a fair amount of skill to get that position right. You know what I mean? With all due respect to Conor, he's an excellent nine, but I don't think he'd be an excellent 10. Far from test level, but that's my opinion on it. But maybe I have too much belief in the other 10s in the country, but I think it's not an option. I think it wouldn't... if you're a test or an out half for one of the provinces, and you saw Conor Murray playing at out half for Ireland at the weekend, it would leave you bitterly disappointed.
Yeah. And in when you talk about the skill that's required at 10, specifically,
it's a completely different skill set. You know what I mean? It's very, very different there. For example, so it would be like, you know, if you put it that way, if you go back, it's like, you know what I mean? Is it, maybe it's not the same argument, but it's maybe like starting Johnny at 9. Like, that doesn't sound logical to me.
No, it doesn't sound logical. But it's just, I think even Andy Farrell said Murray at 10 is a viable option. You know, he said this is viable.
Well. Yeah, most definitely, I would think in your 23, obviously, you have to make up three different backlines depending on injuries. But you'd also, you know what I mean? You wouldn't be thinking he's in your first two 10s. He most definitely is an option. And I think... it was just because he played in the 10 jersey the last day coming off the bench. I think he had a little bit of a point proof. If that was in the 9 jersey, I think he would have done just as well.
Yeah, okay.
He's very comfortable with the ball. He's a great rugby player. But in terms of starting a test match at 10, I think, Ireland has, for me, better options.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe the more pressing issue for Conor Murray is Jameson Gibson-Park. So he did his chances no harm. Who starts in Twickenham for you?
That's a good question. I obviously have... I know Conor's game... I would say they'll start Gibson-Park again and they'll launch Conor from the bench. I think it's about driving internal competition. I suppose template before the Wales game was the people in possession of the jerseys, if they go well, they have a great chance of starting in Twickenham. So a lot of them did very well. So you could easily roll out the same team. And I think it's only going to be good for Conor's long-term aspirations that you have someone like Gibson Park snapping on his heels. But now that he's done well, I'd say you'd roll with him again. And we all know what Conor can do. So he'll be... he'll have a huge role to play. There's no doubt about it.
You alluded to some of the things Ireland will have to do to get around England's physicality at Twickenham. How else do you beat this English team? Because they do feel, not least at Twickenham, even if there are no fans there, they do feel pretty formidable right now for obvious reasons. So have you seen any chinks there or things that Ireland can target?
I'm sure I have. I haven't studied them in depth for a long time. I was in the ground in Japan when they beat New Zealand, and that was an amazing performance, I thought. They tore New Zealand apart. With a brilliant kicking game, but also with the capacity to keep the ball in hand. And Ford was had a really, really was probably his best game for me in an England jersey that night. They don't have many weaknesses, Joe. No, they're one of the best teams in the world. There's no doubt about it, especially considering South Africa aren't playing. Also, England and France are the two teams that are performing very, very well. So they don't have many weaknesses. They've, I suppose, an awful lot of trust and maturity in their team now, and there's a lot of, I suppose, combinations that are beginning to gel and excelling at test level. But you know, that's the beauty of sports. You look what happened with Argentina, New Zealand, Wing at the weekend, and it blows every, I suppose, sporting template for performance out of the window when you haven't played for over 300 days as a team. But how polished did they look? And you know, when the attitude is there, and the game plan and the belief, and I suppose the doing the simple things well over and over again, it shows you that anything is possible. So of course, I think with the belief this Irish team have, and with the you'd like to think that it, you know, I mean, it's a massive opportunity as opposed to a mission you're dreading.
See, I'm sort of dreading it. Twickenham has not been so kind of late, you know, and it doesn't look like that gap is getting any closer. Like, so for instance, a specific, Mauro Itoje. Like, Ireland have got to figure out what to do with Mauro Itoje, as extraordinary as he is. What can you do with him? Come on, coach. Come on, coach.
I think that's one side of it, Joe, but the other side of it too is, I think, for Ireland, you'd like to think that they have enough to concentrate on for themselves. You can worry about Mario Itoje, but if you're always looking at the opposition, if you're always looking to maybe not copy, but do what he's doing, you'll always be a step behind. Ireland are, you know, with James Ryan and whoever his partner is in the second row, they'll be a good combo. You know, I think what excites me in coaching is the fact that, irrespective of the opposition, the challenge to get 23 players firing and performing at 90% of their optimum is a huge challenge in itself. So that would be, I think, very pleasing for Andy Farrell's coaching team to see. Okay, let's concentrate on what we can do, and if we can do it well, I'm sure they'll pose questions, because everyone in the game has a weakness. It's about how you can, I suppose, consistently chip away at that to get some dividends.
So look, England are favourites. What's an acceptable kind of day for Ireland, given previous events at Twickenham over the last couple of years and Dublin in 19? It may not necessarily be a win. What would you say? Okay, that's acceptable.
Yeah,
for Andy
you're
Farrell?
Right. That's a good question. I think a strong performance. You know, I think the great thing about it is that people at home or whoever loves watching the Irish rugby team, they'll be able to come up with their own opinion on it. So, you know, I think it's expecting Ireland to beat England and Twickenham is a big ask, but it's not out of the realms of possibility. You know, on these things, it's about winning the first 10 minutes and then kind of, I suppose, winning the body language battle and then implementing your, I suppose, footprint on it. What you don't want to do is you don't need to go a 14-0 down to England and then give them confidence, and then they probably get into that mode where they can run over teams because they can play a power game and they can play a pace game. We, because I suppose of the profile of certain players, don't have as many power players as they have, but that doesn't mean that we necessarily aren't as big a threat either.
Yeah, and a final one, quite often a feature of these games has been Ireland in their own half, either taking too long to kick it or getting themselves into all sorts of bother. From a kicking game point of view, we've seen Sexton kick a bit more, we've seen fewer box kicks. What do you want to see in that department?
Yeah, that is good, because the danger is if you kick loosely to England with Johnny May and with Daly, you could be under your post quite a bit. I think where England I find very interesting is the fact that the number and variety of kickers they have in their back line. They've stolen the jump on a lot of teams in terms of their attacking kick, but their attacking kicks are very good because they're a threat with the ball in hand, so they're multi-threats across the park. And you know, I think whether it's Farrell is a really, really astute player, and he's a physical player, but he's also a smart player. So once he gets on the front foot, as we've seen with Saracens in the Aviva, obviously he didn't play in that game, and that shows just how good or how important winning collisions are, getting front foot ball. But also you could see in the second, minutes 50 to 70, Leinster still had chances against Saracens that on another day they could have taken.
Okay, well, we'll talk next week. It's going to be a great marker to see where Farrell and this team is. That's a Twickenham at the weekend. You mentioned Argentina, so we've got to touch on this. 402 days since their last test. Quite extraordinary. We had Michael Cech in, the coaches.
402?
Yeah, 402 days, no games. We had Mario Ledesma in tears. We had Cheka sitting there in the coaching box. For people who didn't see the game, I mean, we keep hearing you have to score loads of tries to beat New Zealand. Well, Argentina did it their own way. Sanchez and Moonga had early penalties. Then on 19 minutes with the advantage, a little Sanchez chip, and he got a try and got on the end of it. That was 10-3. Bowden Barrett scored a penalty. Then another scrum penalty for Argentina goes 16-3. Then 19-3. Then the All Blacks got a try to go 19-10. But then penalty in 57 minutes, penalty in 75 minutes, and there was a consolation try for the All Blacks to make it 25-10. The closest Argentina had ever come before was 1985, when they drew with the All Blacks. They had one handling error in the entire 80 minutes after 402 days out. So that was something. What did you make of both teams?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable game of rugby. I think, as you said, it was. I was on a bus actually going to Paris watching it, and what an atmosphere, obviously, because there was crowd was full. Well, as full as it is with, I suppose, COVID restrictions, but there was a great atmosphere. Argentina were so accurate, but I thought it was Matera's comments after the game were very revealing in the fact that. They seem to figure themselves out in the fact that for many years, I think they tried to copy potentially what New Zealand or South Africa or Australia were doing. But then they just said, we're different. We're South Americans. We do things very differently. And I think they really tapped into the emotional side. And it was such a powerful performance. But tellingly, he said that they were happy to defend against the All Blacks, which is, which you've never heard any other team say, because normally if you give them the ball, New Zealand after phases, they rip you apart. But their attack wasn't sharp. And obviously around the breakdown and with the poaching new laws, Argentina profited very well from that. And as you said, it was a consolation try. There was never at any stage watching the game that I felt that New Zealand were going to win this game. That you could see that the energy and the flow was with Argentina. And they were absolutely fully deserving of their victory.
Mm. That is an interesting point about that you said afterwards, that where they talked about doing things their own way. And, you know, we're South American, we have our own rugby DNA. So for you, what is quintessential Argentinian rugby at its best?
Well, I think in the game nowadays, you know that you have to be strong in a lot of areas, the scrum and the line out, the kicking game and your defence and your attack. But as you said, like one handling error in 80 minutes and New Zealand, or sorry, Argentina played and they were dangerous with the ball and they put New Zealand under pressure. I think New Zealand will be having a look at how to defend there. It comes back, I suppose, to points we've discussed on the show before, and the fact that they're soft in the outside challenge and they let teams kind of run at them. But nowadays, when teams are so good around the ruck, it's very hard to get possession off them. And New Zealand were ill-disciplined and they came up with a lot of penalties against them, which is uncharacteristic of them. But it seems to be very much a team in transition and a little bit, I suppose, you know, it gone is that stability where you'd associate, you know, with the teams of McCaw and Carter and Reid. But now, that, I suppose, aura of invincibility is most definitely gone.
Because the new batch, correct me if I'm wrong, but you just presume they can't be as good as the previous group, or are they?
But they wouldn't think like that, I suppose, because they'd be, you know, I suppose when they get into New Zealand camp and spending time with the Crusaders, it's a very, very positive environment.
What do you think outside of that environment? I know they have to think a certain way, but if you're looking at it in a cold way on the outside, I would just presume they can't be as good as the previous batch.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I just think that there was an exceptional batch led by Dan Carter, and I'd obviously be biased because I've spent time with him and I kind of understand his his mindset, but an exceptional player. But Mwanga is you know, I mean, putting a stamp on it, but at the same stage, he's still at the initial stages of, obviously, when you have someone like Beauden Barrett there, the number 10 jersey will never feel like it's his on his own. And sometimes in that position, you need that guarantee that you're going to be running it for game in, game out. But there's, I suppose, question marks in the back three, and there's question marks in the centres, and there's obviously the back rows and a lot of new players. Second rows, it's, you know, I mean, they've a luxury of choices, but the front row too, there's opportunities for people. You know, so I think there's no doubt that this New Zealand team, it's under the new management, hasn't hit the ground yet. And would, I suppose, the enormity of pressure that comes with that job, they'll have to find their straps pretty soon.
Yes. Brilliant stuff as ever. Thanks so much. Much appreciated, Ronan. Thank you.
See you, Joe. Great to chat. Thanks.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.